Chapter 13 Continued. Harry stopped dead, his heart banging against his ribs. "What's the matter?" said Ron. Harry pointed. Ron pulled out his wand and muttered, "Lumos." A beam of light fell across the grass, hit the bottom of a tree, and illuminated its branches. There, crouching amongst the budding leaves, was Crookshanks.
"Get out of it!" Ron roared, and he stooped down and seized a stone lying on the grass,
but before he could do anything else, Crookshanks had vanished with one swish of his long ginger tail.
"See?" Ron said furiously, chucking the stone down again. "She's still letting him wander about wherever he wants, probably washing down scabbers with a couple of birds now."
Harry didn't say anything. He took a deep breath as relief seeped through him. He had been sure for a moment that those eyes had belonged to the Grimm. They set off for the castle once more, slightly ashamed of his moment of panic. Harry didn't say anything to Ron, nor did he look left or right until they had reached the well-lit entrance hall. Harry went down to breakfast next morning with the rest of the boys in his dormitory, all of whom seemed to think the Firebolt deserved a sort of guard of honour. As Harry entered the great hall, heads turned in the direction of the Firebolt, and there was a good deal of excited muttering. Harry saw with enormous satisfaction that the Slytherin team were all looking thunderstruck.
"Did you see his face?" said Ron gleefully, looking back at Malfoy. "He can't believe it. This is brilliant."
Wood, too, was basking in the reflected glory of the Firebolt.
"Put it here, Harry," he said,
laying the broom in the middle of the table and carefully turning it so that its name faced upwards. People from the Ravenclaw and Hufflepuff tables were soon coming over to look. Cedric Diggory came over to congratulate Harry on having acquired such a superb replacement for his Nimbus, and Percy's Ravenclaw girlfriend, Penelope Clearwater, asked if she could actually hold the Firebolt.
"Now, now, Penny, no sabotage," said Percy heartily, as she examined the Firebolt closely. "Penelope and I have got a bet on," he told the team. 10 galleons on the outcome of the match."
Penelope put the Firebolt down again, thanked Harry, and went back to her table.
"Harry, make sure you win," said Percy in an urgent whisper. "I haven't got 10 galleons.
"Yes, I'm coming, Penny,"
and he bustled off to join her in a piece of toast.
"Sure you can manage that broom, Potter?" said a cold, drawling voice.
Draco Malfoy had arrived for a closer look, Crabbe and Goyle right behind him.
"Yeah, reckon so," said Harry, casually.
"Got plenty of special features, hasn't it?"
said Malfoy, eyes glittering maliciously.
"Shame it doesn't come with a parachute, in case you get too near a Dementor."
Crabbe and Goyle sniggered.
"Pity you can't attach an extra arm to yours, Malfoy," said Harry. "Then it could catch the Snitch for you."
The Gryffindor team laughed loudly. Malfoy's pale eyes narrowed, and he stalked away. They watched him rejoin the rest of the Slytherin team, who put their heads together, no doubt asking Malfoy whether Harry's broom really was a Firebolt. At 11:15, the Gryffindor team set off for the changing rooms. The weather couldn't have been more different from their match against Hufflepuff. It was a clear, cool day, with a very light breeze. There would be no visibility problems this time, and Harry, though nervous, was starting to feel the excitement only a Quidditch match could bring. They could hear the rest of the school moving into the stadium beyond. Harry took off his black school robes, removed his wand from his pocket, and stuck it inside the T-shirt he was going to wear under his Quidditch robes. He only hoped he wouldn't need it. He wondered suddenly whether Professor Lupin was in the crowd, watching.
"You know what we've got to do," said Wood, as they prepared to leave the changing rooms. "If we lose this match, we're out of the running. Just fly like you did in practice yesterday, and we'll be okay."
They walked out onto the pitch to tumultuous applause. The Ravenclaw team, dressed in blue, were already standing in the middle of the pitch. Their seeker, Cho Chang, was the only girl in their team. She was shorter than Harry by about a head, and Harry couldn't help noticing, nervous as he was, that she was extremely pretty. She smiled at Harry as the teams faced each other behind their captains, and he felt a slight jolt in the region of his stomach that he didn't think had anything to do with nerves.
"Wood,
"Davis, shake hands," Madam Hooch said briskly, and Wood shook hands with the Ravenclaw captain. "Mount your brooms. On my whistle. 3, 2, 1.
Harry kicked off into the air, and the firebolt zoomed higher and faster than any other broom. He soared around the stadium and began squinting around for the snitch, listening all the while to the commentary which was being provided by the Weasley twins' friend, Lee Jordan.
"They're off, and the big excitement this match is the firebolt which Harry Potter is flying for Gryffindor. According to which broomstick, the firebolt's going to be the broom of choice for the national teams at this year's World Championship."
"Jordan, would you mind telling us what's going on in the match?" interrupted Professor McGonagall's voice.
Right you are, Professor. Just giving a bit of background information. The firebolt, incidentally, has a built-in auto-brake and..."
"Jordan!"
Okay. Gryffindor in possession. Katie Bell of Gryffindor heading for goal."
Harry streaked past Katie in the opposite direction, gazing around for a glint of gold, and noticing that Cho Chang was tailing him closely. She was undoubtedly a very good flyer. She kept cutting across him, forcing him to change direction.
"Show her your acceleration, Harry!" Fred yelled, as he whooshed past in pursuit of a bludger that was aiming for Alicia.
Harry urged the firebolt forward as they rounded the Ravenclaw goalposts, and Cho fell behind. Just as Katie succeeded in scoring the first goal of the match and the Gryffindor end of the pitch went wild, he saw it. The snitch was close to the ground, flitting near one of the barriers. Harry dived. Cho saw what he was doing and tore after him. Harry was speeding up, excitement flooding him. Dives were his speciality. He was 10 feet away. Then a bludger, hit by one of the Ravenclaw beaters, came pelting out of nowhere. Harry veered off course, avoiding it by an inch, and in those few crucial seconds, the snitch had vanished. There was a great "Oh!" of disappointment from the Gryffindor supporters, but much applause for their beater from the Ravenclaw end. George Weasley vented his feelings by hitting the second bludger directly at the offending beater, who was forced to roll right over in mid-air to avoid it.
"Gryffindor lead by 80 points to 0, and look at that firebolt go! Potter's really putting it through its paces now! See it turn! Chang's Comet is just no match for it! The firebolt's precision balance is really noticeable in these long..."
"Jordan, are you being paid to advertise firebolts? Get on with the commentary!" Ravenclaw were pulling back. They had now scored 3 goals, which put Gryffindor only 50 points ahead. If Cho got the snitch before him, Ravenclaw would win. Harry dropped lower, narrowly avoiding a Ravenclaw chaser, scanning the pitch frantically. A glint of gold, a flutter of tiny wings, the snitch was circling the Gryffindor goalpost. Harry accelerated, eyes fixed on the speck of gold ahead, but next second Cho had appeared out of thin air, blocking him.
"Harry, this is no time to be a gentleman!" Wood roared as Harry swerved to avoid a collision. "Knock her off her broom if you have to!"
Harry turned and caught sight of Cho. She was grinning. The snitch had vanished again. Harry turned his firebolt upwards and was soon 20 feet above the game. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Cho following him. She had decided to mark him rather than search for the snitch herself. Right then, if she wanted to tail him, she'd have to take the consequences. He dived again, and Cho, thinking he'd seen the snitch, tried to follow. Harry pulled out of the dive very sharply. She hurtled downwards, he rose fast as a bullet once more, and then saw it for the third time. The snitch was glittering way above the pitch at the Ravenclaw end. He accelerated. So, many feet below, did Cho. He was winning, gaining on the snitch with every second. Then, "Oh!" screamed Cho, pointing. Distracted, Harry looked down. 3 Dementors, 3 tall, black, hooded Dementors, were looking up at him. He didn't stop to think. Plunging a hand down the neck of his robes, he whipped out his wand and roared, "Expecto Patronum!" Something silver-white, something enormous, erupted from the end of his wand. He knew it had shot directly at the Dementors, but didn't pause to watch. His mind still miraculously clear, he looked ahead. He was nearly there. He stretched out the hand, still grasping his wand, and just managed to close his fingers over the small, struggling snitch. Madam Hooch's whistle sounded. Harry turned around in mid-air and saw 6 scarlet blurs bearing down on him.
Next moment, the whole team were hugging him so hard he was nearly pulled off his broom. Down below, he could hear the roars of the Gryffindors in the crowd.
"That's my boy!"
Wood kept yelling. Alicia, Angelina and Katie had all kissed Harry, and Fred had him in a grip so tight Harry felt as though his head would come off. In complete disarray, the team managed to make its way back to the ground. Harry got off his broom and looked up to see a gaggle of Gryffindor supporters sprinting onto the pitch, Ron in the lead. Before he knew it, he had been engulfed by the cheering crowd.
"Yes!"
Ron yelled, yanking Harry's arm into the air.
"Yes! Yes!"
"Well done, Harry," said Percy, looking delighted. 10 galleons to me. Must find Penelope. Excuse me."
"Good on ye, Harry,"
roared Seamus Finnegan.
"Ruddy brilliant,"
boomed Hagrid over the heads of the milling Gryffindors.
"That was quite some Patronus," said a voice in Harry's ear. Harry turned around to see Professor Lupin, who looked both shaken and pleased.
"The Dementors didn't affect me at all," Harry said excitedly. "I didn't feel a thing."
That would be because they weren't Dementors," said Professor Lupin. "Come and see."
He led Harry out of the crowd until they were able to see the edge of the pitch.
"You gave Mr. Malfoy quite a fright," said Lupin.
Harry stared. Lying in a crumpled heap on the ground were Malfoy, Crabbe, Goyle and Marcus Flint, the Slytherin team captain, all struggling to remove themselves from long, black, hooded robes. It looked as though Malfoy had been standing on Goyle's shoulders. Standing over them, with an expression of the utmost fury on her face, was Professor McGonagall.
"An unworthy trick!" she was shouting. "A low and cowardly attempt to sabotage the Gryffindor Seeker. Detention for all of you, and 50 points from Slytherin. I shall be speaking to Professor Dumbledore about this. Make no mistake. Ah, here he comes now."
If anything could have set the seal on Gryffindor's victory, it was this. Ron, who had fought his way through to Harry's side, doubled up with laughter as they watched Malfoy fighting to extricate himself from the robe, Goyle's head still stuck inside it.
"Come on, Harry," said George, fighting his way over. "Party! Gryffindor Common Room, now!"
"Right," said Harry, and feeling happier than he had done in ages, he and the rest of the team led the way, still in their scarlet robes, out of the stadium and back up to the castle. It felt as though they had already won the Quidditch Cup. The party went on all day and well into the night. Fred and George Weasley disappeared for a couple of hours and returned with armfuls of bottles of butter beer, pumpkin fizz, and several bags full of Honeyduke sweets.
"How did you do that?"
squealed Angelina Johnson as George started throwing peppermint toads into the crowd.
"With a little help from Mooney, Wormtail, Padfoot and Prongs," Fred muttered in Harry's ear. Only one person wasn't joining in the festivities. Hermione, incredibly, was sitting in a corner attempting to read an enormous book entitled Home Life and Social Habits of British Muggles. Harry broke away from the table where Fred and George had started juggling butterbeer bottles and went over to her.
"Did you even come to the match?" he asked her.
"Of course I did,"
said Hermione in a strangely high-pitched voice, not looking up.
"And I'm very glad we won, and I think you did really well, but I need to read this by Monday."
"Come on, Hermione, come and have some food," Harry said, looking over at Ron and wondering whether he was in a good enough mood to bury the hatchet.
"I can't, Harry. I've still got 422 pages to read,"
said Hermione, now sounding slightly hysterical.
"Anyway,"
she glanced over at Ron too,
"he doesn't want me to join in."
There was no arguing with this, as Ron chose that moment to say loudly, "If Scabbers hadn't just been eaten, he could have had some of these fudge flies. He used to really like them." Hermione burst into tears. Before Harry could say or do anything, she had tucked the enormous book under her arm and, still sobbing, ran towards the staircase to the girls' dormitories and out of sight.
"Can't you give her a break?" Harry asked Ron quietly.
"No," said Ron flatly. "If she just acted like she was sorry. But she'll never admit she's wrong, Hermione. She's still acting like Scabbers has gone on holiday or something." The Gryffindor party only ended when Professor McGonagall turned up in her tartan dressing gown and hairnet at 1 in the morning to insist that they all went to bed. Harry and Ron climbed the stairs to their dormitory, still discussing the match. At last, exhausted, Harry climbed into bed, twitched the hangings of his four-poster shut to block out a ray of moonlight, lay back, and felt himself almost instantly drifting off to sleep. He had a very strange dream. He was walking through a forest, his firebolt over his shoulder, following something silvery white. It was winding its way through the trees ahead, and he could only catch glimpses of it between the leaves. Anxious to catch up with it, he sped up, but as he moved faster, so did his quarry. Harry broke into a run, and ahead he heard hooves gathering speed. Now he was running flat out, and ahead he could hear galloping. Then he turned a corner into a clearing, and... Ah! No! Harry woke as suddenly as though he'd been hit in the face. Disorientated in the total darkness, he fumbled with his hangings. He could hear movements around him, and Seamus Finnegan's voice from the other side of the room. "What's going on?" Harry thought he heard the dormitory door slam. At last, finding the divide in his curtains, he ripped them back, and at the same moment Dean Thomas lit his lamp. Ron was sitting up in bed, the hangings torn from one side, a look of the utmost terror on his face.
"Black! Sirius Black! With a knife!"
"What?"
"Here, just now. Slash the curtains. Woke me up."
"You sure you weren't dreaming, Ron?" said Dean.
"Look at the curtains, I tell you. He was here."
They all scrambled out of bed. Harry reached the dormitory door first, and they sprinted back down the staircase. Doors opened behind them, and sleepy voices called after them.
"Who shouted? What are you doing?"
The common room was lit by the glow of the dying fire, still littered with debris from the party. It was deserted.
"Are you sure you weren't dreaming, Ron?"
"I'm telling you, I saw him."
"What's all the noise? Professor McGonagall told us to go to bed."
A few of the girls had come down their staircase, pulling on dressing gowns and yawning. Boys, too, were reappearing.
"Excellent. Are we carrying on?" said Fred Weasley, brightly. "Everyone back upstairs," said Percy, hurrying into the common room and pinning his head boy badge to his pyjamas as he spoke.
"Sirius Black," said Ron faintly, "in our dormitory, with a knife, woke me up."
The common room went very still.
"Nonsense," said Percy, looking startled. "You had too much to eat, Ron. Had a nightmare."
"I'm telling you."
"Now, really, enough's enough."
Professor McGonagall was back. She slammed the portrait behind her as she entered the common room and stared furiously around.
"I am delighted that Gryffindor won the match, but this is getting ridiculous. Percy, I expected better of you."
"I certainly didn't authorise this, Professor," said Percy, puffing himself up indignantly. "I was just telling them all to get back to bed. My brother Ron here had a nightmare."
"It wasn't a nightmare!" Ron yelled. "Professor, I woke up and Sirius Black was standing over me holding a knife!"
Professor McGonagall stared at him.
"Don't be ridiculous, Weasley. How could he possibly have got through the portrait hole?"
"Ask him," said Ron, pointing a shaking finger at the back of Sir Cadogan's picture. "Ask him if he saw..." Glaring suspiciously at Ron, Professor McGonagall pushed the portrait back open and went outside. The whole common room listened with bated breath.
"Sir Cadogan, did you just let a man enter Gryffindor Tower?"
"Certainly, good lady," cried Sir Cadogan.
There was a stunned silence, both inside and outside the common room.
You did," said Professor McGonagall.
But the password?"
"He had 'em," said Sir Cadogan proudly. "Had the whole week's, milady. Read 'em off a little piece of paper."
Professor McGonagall pulled herself back through the portrait hole to face the stunned crowd. She was white as chalk.
"Which person," she said, her voice shaking, "which abysmally foolish person wrote down this week's passwords and left them lying around?"
There was utter silence, broken by the smallest of terrified squeaks. Neville Longbottom, trembling from head to fluffy-slippered toes, raised his hand slowly into the air. Chapter 14 Snape's Grudge. No one in Gryffindor Tower slept that night. They knew that the castle was being searched again, and the whole house stayed awake in the common room, waiting to hear whether Black had been caught. Professor McGonagall came back at dawn to tell them that he had again escaped. Everywhere they went next day, they saw signs of tighter security. Professor Flitwick could be seen teaching the front doors to recognize a large picture of Sirius Black. Filch was suddenly bustling up and down the corridors, boarding up everything from tiny cracks in the walls to mouse holes. Sir Cadogan had been sacked. His portrait had been taken back to its lonely landing on the seventh floor, and the fat lady was back. She had been expertly restored, but was still extremely nervous, and had only agreed to return to her job on condition that she was given extra protection. A bunch of surly security trolls had been hired to guard her. They paced the corridor in a menacing group, talking in grunts and comparing the size of their clubs. Harry couldn't help noticing that the statue of the one-eyed witch on the third floor remained unguarded and unblocked. It seemed that Fred and George had been right in thinking that they, and now Harry, Ron and Hermione, were the only ones who knew about the hidden passageway within it. "Do you reckon we should tell someone?" Harry asked Ron. "We know he's not coming in through Honeydukes," said Ron dismissively. "We'd have heard if the shop had been broken into." Harry was glad Ron took this view. If the one-eyed witch was boarded up too, he would never be able to go into Hogsmeade again. Ron had become an instant celebrity. For the first time in his life, people were paying more attention to him than to Harry, and it was clear that Ron was rather enjoying the experience. Though still severely shaken by the night's events, he was happy to tell anyone who asked what had happened with a wealth of detail. "I was asleep, and I heard this ripping noise, and I thought it was in my dream, you know. But then there was this draught. I woke up, and one side of the hangings on my bed had been pulled down. I rolled over, and I saw him, standing over me, like a skeleton, with loads of filthy hair, holding this great long knife. Must have been 12 inches, and he looked at me, and I looked at him, and then I yelled, and he scarpered." "Why, though?" Ron added to Harry, as the group of second-year girls who had been listening to his chilling tale departed. "Why did he scarper?" Harry had been wondering the same thing. Why had Black, having got the wrong bed, not silenced Ron and proceeded to Harry? Black had proved 12 years ago that he didn't mind murdering innocent people, and this time he had been facing 5 unarmed boys, 4 of whom were asleep. "He must have known he'd have a job getting back out of the castle once you'd yelled and woken people up," said Harry thoughtfully. "He'd have had to kill the whole house to get back through the portrait hole. Then he would have met the teachers." Neville was in total disgrace. Professor McGonagall was so furious with him she had banned him from all future Hogsmeade visits, given him a detention, and forbidden anyone to give him the password into the tower. Poor Neville was forced to wait outside the common room every night for somebody to let him in, while the security trolls leered unpleasantly at him. None of these punishments, however, came close to matching the one his grandmother had in store for him. 2 days after Black's break-in, she sent Neville the very worst thing a Hogwarts student could receive over breakfast, a howler. The school owls swooped into the great hall, carrying the post as usual, and Neville choked as a huge barn owl landed in front of him, a scarlet envelope clutched in its beak. Harry and Ron, who were sitting opposite him, recognized the letter as a howler at once. Ron had got one from his mother the year before. "Run for it, Neville," Ron advised. Neville didn't need telling twice. He seized the envelope and, holding it before him like a bomb, sprinted out of the hall while the Slytherin table exploded with laughter at the sight of him. They heard the howler go off in the entrance hall, Neville's grandmother's voice, magically magnified to 100 times its usual volume, shrieking about how he had brought shame on the whole family. Harry was too busy feeling sorry for Neville to notice immediately that he had a letter too. Hedwig got his attention by nipping him sharply on the wrist.
"Ouch!
Oh, thanks, Hedwig." Harry tore open the envelope while Hedwig helped herself to some of Neville's cornflakes. The note inside said,
"Dear Harry and Ron, how about having tea with me this afternoon, round 6? I'll come and collect you from the castle. Wait for me in the entrance hall. You're not allowed out on your own. Cheers, Hagrid."
"He probably wants to hear all about Black," said Ron. So at 6 o'clock that afternoon, Harry and Ron left Gryffindor Tower, passed the security trolls at a run, and headed down to the entrance hall. Hagrid was already waiting for them. "All right, Hagrid," said Ron. "Suppose you want to hear about Saturday night, do you?"
"I've already heard all about it," said Hagrid, opening the front doors and leading them outside.
"Oh," said Ron, looking slightly put out. The first thing they saw on entering Hagrid's cabin was Buckbeak, who was stretched out on top of Hagrid's patchwork quilt, his enormous wings folded tight to his body, enjoying a large plate of dead ferrets. Averting his eyes from this unpleasant sight, Harry saw a gigantic hairy brown suit and a very horrible yellow and orange tie hanging from the top of Hagrid's wardrobe door. "What are they for, Hagrid?" said Harry.
"Buckbeak's case against the Committee for the Disposal of Dangerous Creatures," said Hagrid. "This Friday, him and me'll be going down to London together. I've booked 2 beds on the night bus."
Harry felt a nasty pang of guilt. He had completely forgotten that Buckbeak's trial was so near, and judging by the uneasy look on Ron's face, he had too. They had also forgotten their promise about helping him prepare Buckbeak's defence. The arrival of the firebolt had driven it clean out of their minds. Hagrid poured them tea and offered them a plate of Bath buns, but they knew better than to accept. They had had too much experience of Hagrid's cooking.
"I got something to discuss with you two,"
said Hagrid, sitting himself between them and looking uncharacteristically serious.
"What?"
said Harry.
"Hermione," said Hagrid.
"What about her?" said Ron.
"She's in a right state, that's what. She's been coming down to visit me a lot since Christmas, been feeling lonely. First you weren't talking to her because of the firebolt. Now you're not talking to her because her cat ate Scabbers,"
Ron interjected angrily.
"Because her cat acted like all cats do," Hagrid continued doggedly. "She's cried a fair few times, you know. Going through a rough time at the moment, bitten off more than she can chew, if you ask me, all the work she's trying to do. Still found time to help me with Buckbeak's case, mind. She's found some really good stuff for me. Reckon he'll stand a good chance now."
"Hagrid, we should have helped as well. Sorry," Harry began awkwardly.
"I'm not blaming you," said Hagrid, waving Harry's apology aside. "God knows you've had enough to be getting on with. I've seen you practising Quidditch every hour of the day and night. But I've got to tell you, I thought you two would value your friend more than broomsticks or rats. That's all."
Harry and Ron exchanged uncomfortable looks.
"Really upset she was when Black nearly stabbed you, Ron. She got her heart in the right place, Hermione has, and you two not talking to her.
If you'd just get rid of that cat, I'd speak to her again," Ron said angrily. "But she's still sticking up for it. It's a maniac, and she won't hear a word against it."
"Ah, well, people can be a bit stupid about their pets," said Hagrid wisely.
Behind him, Buckbeak spat a few ferret bones onto Hagrid's pillow. They spent the rest of their visit discussing Gryffindor's improved chances for the Quidditch Cup. At 9 o'clock, Hagrid walked them back up to the castle. A large group of people was bunched around the notice board when they returned to the common room.
"Hogsmeade next weekend," said Ron, craning over the heads to read the new notice.
"What do you reckon?" he added quietly to Harry as they went to sit down.
"Well, Filch hasn't done anything about the passage into Honeydukes," Harry said, even more quietly.
"Harry," said a voice in his right ear. Harry started and looked around at Hermione, who was sitting at the table right behind them and clearing a space in the wall of books that had been hiding her.
"Harry, if you go into Hogsmeade again, I'll tell Professor McGonagall about that map," said Hermione.
"Can you hear someone talking, Harry?"
growled Ron, not looking at Hermione.
"Ron, how can you let him go with you, after what Sirius Black nearly did to you? I mean it, I'll tell."
"So now you're trying to get Harry expelled," said Ron furiously. "Haven't you done enough damage this year?"
Hermione opened her mouth to respond, but with a soft hiss, Crookshanks leapt onto her lap. Hermione took one frightened look at the expression on Ron's face, gathered Crookshanks up, and hurried away towards the girls' dormitories.
"So, how about it?" Ron said to Harry, as though there'd been no interruption. "Come on, last time we went you didn't see anything. You haven't even been inside Zonko's yet."
Harry looked around to check that Hermione was well out of earshot.
"Okay," he said, "but I'm taking the invisibility cloak this time."
On Saturday morning, Harry packed his invisibility cloak in his bag, slipped the Marauder's map into his pocket, and went down to breakfast with everyone else. Hermione kept shooting suspicious looks down the table at him, but he avoided her eye and was careful to let her see him walking back up the marble staircase in the entrance hall as everybody else proceeded to the front doors.
"Bye," Harry called to Ron. "See you when you get back."
Ron grinned and winked. Harry hurried up to the third floor, slipping the Marauder's map out of his pocket as he went. Crouching behind the one-eyed witch, he smoothed it out. A tiny dot was moving in his direction. Harry squinted at it. The minuscule writing next to it read, "Neville Longbottom." Harry quickly pulled out his wand, muttered, "Descendium," and shoved his bag into the statue. But before he could climb in himself, Neville came around the corner.
"Harry, I forgot you weren't going to Hogsmeade either."
"Hi, Neville," said Harry, moving swiftly away from the statue and pushing the map back into his pocket. "What are you up to?"
"Nothing," shrugged Neville. "Want a game of exploding snap?"
Not now. I was going to go to the library and do that vampire essay for Lupin."
"I'll come with you," said Neville brightly. "I haven't done it either."
Hang on. Yeah, I forgot. I finished it last night."
"Brilliant. You can help me,"
said Neville, his round face anxious.
"I don't understand that thing about the garlic at all. Do they have to eat it, or—"
Neville broke off with a small gasp, looking over Harry's shoulder. It was Snape. Neville took a quick step behind Harry.
"And what are you two doing here?"
said Snape, coming to a halt and looking from one to the other.
"An odd place to meet."
To Harry's immense disquiet, Snape's black eyes flicked to the doorways on either side of them, and then to the one-eyed witch.
"We're not meeting here," said Harry. "We just met here."
"Indeed," said Snape. "You have a habit of turning up in unexpected places, Potter, and you are rarely there for no reason. I suggest the pair of you return to Gryffindor Tower, where you belong." Harry and Neville set off without another word. As they turned the corner, Harry looked back. Snape was running one of his hands over the one-eyed witch's head, examining it closely. Harry managed to shake Neville off at the fat lady by telling him the password, then pretending he'd left his vampire essay in the library and doubling back. Once out of sight of the security trolls, he pulled out the map again and held it close to his nose. The third-floor corridor seemed to be deserted. Harry scanned the map carefully and saw, with a leap of relief, that the tiny dot labelled Severus Snape was now back in its office. He sprinted back to the one-eyed witch, opened her hump, heaved himself inside, and slid down to meet his bag at the bottom of the stone chute. He wiped the Marauder's map blank again, then set off at a run. Harry, completely hidden beneath the invisibility cloak, emerged into the sunlight outside Honeydukes and prodded Ron in the back.
"It's me," he muttered.
"What kept you?"
Ron hissed.
"Snape was hanging around."
They set off up the high street.
"Where are you?"
Ron kept muttering out of the corner of his mouth.
"Are you still there? This feels weird."
They went to the post office. Ron pretended to be checking the price of an owl to Bill in Egypt so that Harry could have a good look around. The owls sat hooting softly down at him, at least 300 of them, from great greys right down to tiny little Scops owls. Local deliveries only, which were so small they could have sat in the palm of Harry's hand. Then they visited Zonko's, which was so packed with students Harry had to exercise great care not to tread on anyone and cause a panic. There were jokes and tricks to fulfil even Fred and George's wildest dreams. Harry gave Ron whispered orders and passed him some gold from under the cloak. They left Zonko's with their money bags considerably lighter than they had been on entering, but their pockets bulging with dung bombs, hiccup sweets, frog spawn soap, and a nose-biting teacup apiece. The day was fine and breezy, and neither of them felt like staying indoors, so they walked past the Three Broomsticks and climbed a slope to visit the Shrieking Shack, the most haunted dwelling in Britain. It stood a little way above the rest of the village, and even in daylight was slightly creepy, with its boarded windows and dank, overgrown garden. "Even the Hogwarts ghosts avoid it," said Ron, as they leaned on the fence, looking up at it. "I asked Nearly Headless Nick. He says he's heard a very rough crowd live here. No one can get in. Fred and George tried, obviously, but all the entrances are sealed shut." Harry, feeling hot from their climb, was just considering taking off the cloak for a few minutes when they heard voices nearby. Someone was climbing towards the house from the other side of the hill. Moments later, Malfoy had appeared, followed closely by Crabbe and Goyle. Malfoy was speaking. "Should have an owl from my father any time now. He had to go to the hearing to tell him about my arm, about how I couldn't use it for 3 months." Crabbe and Goyle sniggered. "I really wish I could hear that great hairy moron trying to defend himself. There's no arm in him, honest. That hippogriff's as good as dead." Malfoy suddenly caught sight of Ron. His pale face split in a malevolent grin. "What are you doing, Weasley?" Malfoy looked up at the crumbling house behind Ron. "Suppose you'd love to live here, wouldn't you, Weasley? Dreaming about having your own bedroom. I heard your family all sleep in one room. Is that true?" Harry seized the back of Ron's robes to stop him leaping on Malfoy. "Leave him to me," he hissed in Ron's ear. The opportunity was too perfect to miss. Harry crept silently around behind Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle, bent down and scooped a large handful of mud out of the path. "We were just discussing your friend Hagrid," Malfoy said to Ron. "Just trying to imagine what he's saying to the Committee for the Disposal of Dangerous Creatures. Do you think he'll cry when they cut off his hippogriff's splat?" Malfoy's head jerked forwards as the mud hit him. His silver-blonde hair was suddenly dripping in muck. "What the—" Ron had to hold on to the fence to keep himself standing. He was laughing so hard. Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle spun stupidly on the spot, staring wildly around, Malfoy trying to wipe his hair clean. "What was that? Who did that?" "Very haunted up here, isn't it?" said Ron, with the air of one commenting on the weather. Crabbe and Goyle were looking scared. Their bulging muscles were no use against ghosts. Malfoy was staring madly around at the deserted landscape. Harry sneaked along the path, where a particularly sloppy puddle yielded some foul-smelling green sludge. Splatter! Crabbe and Goyle caught some this time. Goyle hopped furiously on the spot, trying to rub it out of his small, dull eyes. "It came from over there," said Malfoy, wiping his face and staring at a spot some 6 feet to the left of Harry. Crabbe blundered forwards, his long arms outstretched like a zombie. Harry dodged around him, picked up a stick, and lobbed it at Crabbe's back. Harry doubled up with silent laughter as Crabbe did a kind of pirouette in mid-air, trying to see who had thrown it. As Ron was the only person Crabbe could see, it was Ron he started towards. But Harry stuck out his leg. Crabbe stumbled, and his huge flat foot caught the hem of Harry's cloak. Harry felt a great tug, then the cloak slid off his face. For a split second, Malfoy stared at him.
"Ah!"
he yelled, pointing at Harry's head. Then he turned tail and ran, at breakneck speed, back down the hill, Crabbe and Goyle behind him. Harry tugged the cloak up again, but the damage was done. "Harry," Ron said, stumbling forward and staring hopelessly at the point where Harry had disappeared, "you'd better run for it. If Malfoy tells anyone, you'd better get back to the castle, quick." "See you later," said Harry, and without another word, he tore back down the path towards Hogsmeade. Would Malfoy believe what he had seen? Would anyone believe Malfoy? Nobody knew about the invisibility cloak. Nobody except Dumbledore. Harry's stomach turned over. Dumbledore would know exactly what had happened if Malfoy said anything. Back into Honeydukes, back down the cellar steps, across the stone floor, through the trap door, Harry pulled off the cloak, tucked it under his arm, and ran flat out along the passage. Malfoy would get back first. How long would it take him to find a teacher? Panting, a sharp pain in his side, Harry didn't slow down until he reached the stone slide. He would have to leave the cloak where it was. It was too much of a giveaway if Malfoy had tipped off a teacher. He hid it in a shadowy corner, then started to climb, fast as he could, his sweaty hands slipping on the sides of the chute. He reached the inside of the witch's hump, tapped it with his wand, stuck his head through, and hoisted himself out. The hump closed, and just as Harry jumped out from behind the statue, he heard quick footsteps approaching. It was Snape. He approached Harry at a swift walk, his black robes swishing, then stopped in front of him. "So," he said. There was a look of suppressed triumph about him. Harry tried to look innocent, all too aware of his sweaty face and his muddy hands, which he quickly hid in his pockets. "Come with me, Potter," said Snape. Harry followed him downstairs, trying to wipe his hands clean on the inside of his robes without Snape noticing. They walked down the stairs to the dungeons and then into Snape's office. Harry had only been in here once before, and he had been in very serious trouble then, too. Snape had acquired a few more horrible, slimy things in jars since last time, all standing on shelves behind his desk, glinting in the firelight and adding to the threatening atmosphere. "Sit," said Snape. Harry sat. Snape, however, remained standing. "Mr. Malfoy has just been to see me with a strange story, Potter," said Snape. Harry didn't say anything. "He tells me that he was up by the Shrieking Shack when he ran into Weasley, apparently alone." Still, Harry didn't speak. "Mr. Malfoy states that he was standing talking to Weasley when a large amount of mud hit him in the back of the head. How do you think that could have happened?" Harry tried to look mildly surprised. "I don't know, Professor." Snape's eyes were boring into Harry's. It was exactly like trying to stare out a hippogriff. Harry tried hard not to blink. "Mr. Malfoy then saw an extraordinary apparition. Can you imagine what it might have been, Potter?" "No," said Harry, now trying to sound innocently curious. "It was your head, Potter, floating in mid-air." There was a long silence. "Maybe he'd better go to Madame Pomfrey," said Harry, "if he's seen things like..." "What would your head have been doing in Hogsmeade, Potter?" said Snape softly. "Your head is not allowed in Hogsmeade. No part of your body has permission to be in Hogsmeade." "I know that," said Harry, striving to keep his face free of guilt or fear. "It sounds like Malfoy is having Malfoy is not having hallucinations," snarled Snape, and he bent down, a hand on each arm of Harry's chair, so that their faces were a foot apart. "If your head was in Hogsmeade, so was the rest of you." "I've been up in Gryffindor Tower," said Harry. "Like you told..." "Can anyone confirm that?" Harry didn't say anything. Snape's thin mouth curled into a horrible smile. "So," he said, straightening up again, "everyone from the Minister for Magic downwards has been trying to keep famous Harry Potter safe from Sirius Black. But famous Harry Potter is a law unto himself. Let the ordinary people worry about his safety. Famous Harry Potter goes where he wants to, with no thought for the consequences." Harry stayed silent. Snape was trying to provoke him into telling the truth. He wasn't going to do it. Snape had no proof. Yet. "How extraordinarily like your father you are, Potter," Snape said suddenly, his eyes glinting. "He too was exceedingly arrogant. A small amount of talent on the Quidditch pitch made him think he was a cut above the rest of us, too, strutting around the place with his friends and admirers. The resemblance between you is uncanny."
"'My dad didn't strut,' said Harry, before he could stop himself, "'and nor do I.' "'Your father didn't set much store by rules, either,' Snape went on, pressing his advantage, his thin face full of malice. "'Rules were for lesser mortals, not Quidditch Cup winners. His head was so swollen—'
"'Shut up!'
Harry was suddenly on his feet. Rage, such as he had not felt since his last night in Privet Drive, was thundering through him. He didn't care that Snape's face had gone rigid, the black eyes flashing dangerously.
"'What did you say to me, Potter?'
"'I told you to shut up about my dad,' Harry yelled. "'I know the truth, all right? He saved your life. Dumbledore told me. You wouldn't even be here if it weren't for my dad.' Snape's sallow skin had gone the colour of sour milk.
"'And did the headmaster tell you the circumstances in which your father saved my life?' he whispered. "'Or did he consider the details too unpleasant for precious Potter's delicate ears?'
Harry bit his lip. He didn't know what had happened, and didn't want to admit it, but Snape seemed to have guessed the truth.
"'I would hate you to run away with a false idea of your father, Potter,' he said, a terrible grin twisting his face. "'Have you been imagining some act of glorious heroism? Then let me correct you. Your saintly father and his friends played a highly amusing joke on me that would have resulted in my death if your father hadn't got cold feet at the last moment. There was nothing brave about what he did. He was saving his own skin as much as mine. Had their joke succeeded, he would have been expelled from Hogwarts.
Snape's uneven, yellowish teeth were bared.
"'Turn out your pockets, Potter!' he spat suddenly.
Harry didn't move. There was a pounding in his ears.
"'Turn out your pockets, or we go straight to the headmaster! Pull them out, Potter!'
Cold with dread, Harry slowly pulled out the bag of Zonko's tricks and the Marauder's map. Snape picked up the Zonko's bag. "'Ron gave them to me,' said Harry, praying he'd get a chance to tip Ron off before Snape saw him. "'He brought them back from Hogsmeade last time.'
"'Indeed? And you've been carrying them round ever since? How very touching. And what is this?'
Snape picked up the map. Harry tried with all his might to keep his face impassive. "'Spare bit of parchment,' he shrugged. Snape turned it over, his eyes on Harry.
"'Surely you don't need such a very old piece of parchment,' he said. "'Why don't I just throw this away?'
His hand moved towards the fire.
"'No!' said Harry quickly.
"'So,' said Snape, his long nostrils quivering, "'is this another treasured gift from Mr. Weasley, or is it something else? "'A letter, perhaps, written in invisible ink, or—' "'Instructions to get into Hogsmeade without passing the Dementors.'
Harry blinked. Snape's eyes gleamed.
Let me see,' he muttered, taking out his wand and smoothing the map out on his desk. "'Reveal your secret,' he said, touching the wand to the parchment. Nothing happened. Harry clenched his hands to stop them shaking.
"'Show yourself!' Snape said, tapping the map sharply.
It stayed blank. Harry was taking deep, calming breaths.
"'Professor Severus Snape, master of this school, commands you to yield the information you conceal,' Snape said, hitting the map with his wand.
As though an invisible hand was writing upon it, words appeared on the smooth surface of the map.
"'Mr. Mooney presents his compliments to Professor Snape "'and begs him to keep his abnormally large nose out of other people's business.'
Snape froze. Harry stared, dumbstruck, at the message. But the map didn't stop there. More writing was appearing beneath the first.
"'Mr. Prongs agrees with Mr. Mooney "'and would like to add that Professor Snape is an ugly git.'
It would have been very funny if the situation hadn't been so serious. And there was more.
Mr. Padfoot would like to register his astonishment that an idiot like that ever became a professor.
Harry closed his eyes in horror. When he'd opened them, the map had had its last word.
Mr. Wormtail bids Professor Snape good day and advises him to wash his hair, the slime ball.
Harry waited for the blow to fall.
So, said Snape softly, we'll see about this. He strode across to his fire, seized a fistful of glittering powder from a jar on the fireplace, and threw it into the flames.
Lupin, Snape called into the fire, I want a word.
Utterly bewildered, Harry stared at the fire. A large shape had appeared in it, revolving very fast. Seconds later, Professor Lupin was clambering out of the fireplace, brushing ash off his shabby robes.
You called, Severus? Said Lupin mildly.
I certainly did, said Snape, his face contorted with fury as he strode back to his desk. I have just asked Potter to empty his pockets. He was carrying this.
Snape pointed at the parchment, on which the words of Messrs. Mooney, Wormtail, Padfoot, and Prongs were still shining. An odd, closed expression appeared on Lupin's face.
Well,
said Snape. Lupin continued to stare at the map. Harry had the impression that Lupin was doing some very quick thinking.
Well, said Snape again, this parchment is plainly full of dark magic. This is supposed to be your area of expertise, Lupin. Where do you imagine Potter got such a thing?
Lupin looked up and, by the merest half-glance in Harry's direction, warned him not to interrupt. Full of dark magic? He repeated mildly. Do you really think so, Severus? It looks to me as though it is merely a piece of parchment that insults anybody who tries to read it. Childish, but surely not dangerous. I imagine Harry got it from a joke shop.
Indeed, said Snape. His jaw had gone rigid with anger. You think a joke shop could supply him with such a thing? You don't think it more likely that he got it directly from the manufacturers?
Harry didn't understand what Snape was talking about. Nor, apparently, did Lupin.
"'You mean from Mr. Wormtail, or one of these people?' he said. "'Harry, do you know any of these men?'
"'No,' said Harry, quickly.
"'You see, Severus,' said Lupin, turning back to Snape. "'It looks like a Zonko product to me.'
Right on cue, Ron came bursting into the office. He was completely out of breath and stopped just short of Snape's desk, clutching the stitch in his chest and trying to speak.
"'I gave Harry that stuff,' he choked. "'Bought it in Zonko's ages ago.'
"'Well,' said Lupin, clapping his hands together and looking around cheerfully. "'That seems to clear that up. Severus, I'll take this back, shall I?' He folded the map and tucked it inside his robes. "'Harry, Ron, come with me. I need a word about my vampire essay. Excuse us, Severus.' Harry didn't dare look at Snape as they left his office. He, Ron, and Lupin walked all the way back into the entrance hall before speaking. Then Harry turned to Lupin.
"'Professor, I don't want to hear explanations,' said Lupin shortly.
He glanced around the empty entrance hall and lowered his voice. "'I happen to know that this map was confiscated by Mr. Filch many years ago. Yes, I know it's a map.' he said, as Harry and Ron looked amazed. "'I don't want to know how it fell into your possession. I am, however, astounded that you didn't hand it in, particularly after what happened the last time a student left information about the castle lying around. And I can't let you have it back, Harry.' Harry had expected that and was too keen for explanations to protest.
"'Why did Snape think I'd got it from the manufacturers?'
"'Because,' Lupin hesitated, "'because these map-makers would have wanted to lure you out of school. "'They'd think it extremely entertaining.'
"'Do you know them?' said Harry, impressed.
"'We've met,' he said shortly. "'He was looking at Harry more seriously than ever before. "'Don't expect me to cover up for you again, Harry. "'I cannot make you take Sirius Black seriously, but I would have thought—' that what you have heard when the Dementors draw near you would have had more of an effect on you. Your parents gave their lives to keep you alive, Harry. A poor way to repay them, gambling their sacrifice for a bag of magic tricks. He walked away, leaving Harry feeling worse by far than he had at any point in Snape's office. Slowly, he and Ron mounted the marble staircase. As Harry passed the one-eyed witch, he remembered the invisibility cloak. It was still down there. But he didn't dare go and get it. "'It's my fault,' said Ron abruptly. "'I persuaded you to go. Lupin's right. It was stupid. We shouldn't have done it.'
He broke off. They had reached the corridor where the security trolls were pacing, and Hermione was walking towards them. One look at her face convinced Harry that she had heard what had happened. His heart plummeted. Had she told Professor McGonagall?
"'Come to have a good gloat,' said Ron savagely as she stopped in front of them. "'Or have you just been to tell on us?'
"'No,' said Hermione. She was holding a letter in her hands, and her lip was trembling. "'I just thought you ought to know. Hagrid lost his case. Buckbeak is going to be executed.'
Chapter 15 The Quidditch Final
He sent me this, Hermione said, holding out the letter. Harry took it. The parchment was damp, and enormous teardrops had smudged the ink so badly in places that it was very difficult to read.
Dear Hermione, we lost. I'm allowed to bring him back to Hogwarts. Execution date to be fixed. Beaky has enjoyed London. I won't forget all the help you gave us. Hagrid.
"'They can't do this,' said Harry. "'They can't. Buckbeak isn't dangerous. "'Malfoy's dad frightened the committee into it,' said Hermione, wiping her eyes. "'You know what he's like. They're a bunch of doddery old fools, and they were scared. "'There'll be an appeal, though. There always is. "'Only I can't see any hope. Nothing will have changed.'
"'Yeah, it will,' said Ron, fiercely. "'You won't have to do all the work alone this time, Hermione. I'll help.'
"'Oh!' "'Ron!'
Hermione flung her arms around Ron's neck and broke down completely. Ron, looking quite terrified, patted her very awkwardly on the top of the head. Finally, Hermione drew away.
"'Ron, I'm really, really sorry about the Scabbers,' she sobbed.
"'Oh, well, he was old,' said Ron, looking thoroughly relieved that she had let go of him. "'And he was a bit useless.' "'You never know. Mum and Dad might get me an owl now.'
The safety measures imposed on the students since Black's second break-in made it impossible for Harry, Ron and Hermione to go and visit Hagrid in the evenings. Their only chance of talking to him was during Care of Magical Creatures lessons. He seemed numb with shock at the verdict.
"'It's all my fault. Got all tongue-tied.' They was all sitting there in black robes, and I kept dropping me notes and forgetting all them dates you looked up for me, Hermione. And then Lucius Malfoy stood up and said his bit, and the committee just did exactly what he told them.
"'There's still the appeal,' said Ron, fiercely. "'Don't give up yet. We're working on it.' They were walking back up to the castle with the rest of the class. Ahead they could see Malfoy, who was walking with Crabbe and Goyle, and kept looking back, laughing derisively.
"'It's no good, Ron,' said Hagrid sadly, as they reached the castle steps. "'That committee's in Lucius Malfoy's pocket. I'm just going to make sure the rest of Beaky's time is the happiest he's ever had. I owe him that.'
Hagrid turned round and hurried back towards his cabin, his face buried in his handkerchief.
"'Look at him blubber!'
Malfoy, Crabbe and Goyle had been standing just inside the castle doors, listening.
"'Have you ever seen anything quite as pathetic?' said Malfoy. "'And he's supposed to be our teacher!'
Harry and Ron both made furious moves towards Malfoy, but Hermione got there first.
"'Smack!'
She had slapped Malfoy around the face with all the strength she could muster. Malfoy staggered. Harry, Ron, Crabbe and Goyle stood flabbergasted as Hermione raised her hand again.
"'Don't you dare call Hagrid pathetic, you foul, you evil!'
"'Hermione,' said Ron weakly, and he tried to grab her hand as she swung it back.
"'Get off, Ron!'
Hermione pulled out her wand. Malfoy stepped backwards. Crabbe and Goyle looked at him for instructions, thoroughly bewildered. "'Come on,' Malfoy muttered, and next moment all three of them had disappeared into the passageway to the dungeons.
"'Hermione!'
Ron said again, sounding both stunned and impressed.
"'Harry,
"'You'd better beat him in the Quidditch final,' Hermione said shrilly. "'You just better had, because I can't stand it if Slytherin win.'
"'We're due in charms,' said Ron, still goggling at Hermione. "'We'd better go.' They hurried up the marble staircase towards Professor Flitwick's classroom.
"'You're late, boys,'
said Professor Flitwick reprovingly, as Harry opened the classroom door.
"'Come along, quickly. One's out. We're experimenting with cheering charms today. We've already divided into pairs.'
Harry and Ron hurried to a desk at the back and opened their bags. Ron looked behind him. "'Where's Hermione gone?' Harry looked around too. Hermione hadn't entered the classroom, yet Harry knew she had been right next to him when he had opened the door. "'That's weird,' said Harry, staring at Ron. "'Maybe she went to the bathroom or something.' But Hermione didn't turn up all lesson. "'She could have done with a cheering charm on her too,' said Ron, as the class left for lunch, all grinning broadly. The cheering charms had left them with a feeling of great contentment. Hermione wasn't at lunch, either. By the time they had finished their apple pie, the after-effects of the cheering charms were wearing off, and Harry and Ron had started to get slightly worried. "'You don't think Malfoy did something to her?' Ron said anxiously, as they hurried upstairs towards Gryffindor Tower. They passed the security trolls, gave the fat lady the password, Flibbertigibbet, and scrambled through the portrait hole into the common room. Hermione was sitting at a table, fast asleep, her head resting on an open arithmancy book. They went to sit down either side of her. Harry prodded her awake.
"'What?'
said Hermione, waking with a start and staring wildly around.
"'Is it time to go? Which lesson have we got now?'
"'Divination, but it's not for another 20 minutes,' said Harry. "'Hermione, why didn't you come to charms?'
"'What?' "'Oh, no!' Hermione squeaked. "'I forgot to go to charms!'
"'But how could you forget?' said Harry. "'You were with us till we were right outside the classroom.'
"'I don't believe it!' Hermione wailed. "'Was Professor Flitwick angry? "'Oh, it was Malfoy. "'I was thinking about him and I lost track of things.'
"'You know what, Hermione?' said Ron, looking down at the enormous arithmancy book Hermione had been using as a pillow. "'I reckon you're cracking up. You're trying to do too much.'
"'No, I'm not,'
said Hermione, brushing her hair out of her eyes and staring hopelessly around for her bag.
"'I just made a mistake, that's all. I'd better go and see Professor Flitwick and say sorry. I'll see you in divination.'
Hermione joined them at the foot of the ladder to Professor Trelawney's classroom 20 minutes later, looking extremely harassed.
"'I can't believe I missed cheering charms, and I bet they come up in our exams. Professor Flitwick hinted they might.'
Together they climbed the ladder into the dim, stifling tower room. Glowing on every little table was a crystal ball full of pearly white mist. Harry, Ron and Hermione sat down together at the same rickety table. "'I thought we weren't starting crystal balls until next term,' Ron muttered, casting a wary eye around for Professor Trelawney in case she was lurking nearby. "'Don't complain. This means we've finished palmistry,' Harry muttered back. "'I was getting sick of her flinching every time she looked at my hands.'
"'Good day to you,'
said the familiar, misty voice, and Professor Trelawney made her usual dramatic entrance out of the shadows. Parvati and Lavender quivered with excitement, their faces lit by the milky glow of their crystal ball.
"'I have decided to introduce the crystal ball a little earlier than I had planned,' said Professor Trelawney, seating herself with her back to the fire and gazing around. "'The fates have informed me that your examination in June will concern the orb, and I am anxious to give you sufficient practice.'
Hermione snorted.
"'Well, honestly, the fates have informed her. Who sets the exam? She does.' "'What an amazing prediction,' she said, not troubling to keep her voice low.
It was hard to tell whether Professor Trelawney had heard them, as her face was hidden in shadow. She continued, however, as though she had not.
"'Crystal gazing is a particularly refined art,' she said dreamily. "'I do not expect any of you to see when first you peer into the orb's infinite depths.' We shall start by practising relaxing the conscious mind and external eyes. Ron began to snigger uncontrollably and had to stuff his fist in his mouth to stifle the noise. So as to clear the inner eye and the superconscious. Perhaps, if we are lucky, some of you will see before the end of the class. And so they began. Harry, at least, felt extremely foolish, staring blankly at the crystal ball, trying to keep his mind empty when thoughts such as, "This is stupid," kept drifting across it. It didn't help that Ron kept breaking into silent giggles and Hermione kept tutting. "Seen anything yet?" Harry asked them after a quarter of an hour's quiet crystal gazing. "Yeah, there's a burn on this table," said Ron, pointing. "Someone spilled their candle."
"This is such a waste of time," Hermione hissed. "I could be practising something useful. I could be catching up on cheering charms."
Professor Trelawney rustled past. "Would anyone like me to help them interpret the shadowy portents within their orb?" she murmured over the clinking of her bangles.
"I don't need help," Ron whispered. "It's obvious what this means. There's going to be loads of fog tonight."
Both Harry and Hermione burst out laughing.
"Now really," said Professor Trelawney,
as everyone's heads turned in their direction. Parvati and Lavender were looking scandalized.
"You are disturbing the clairvoyant vibrations."
She approached their table and peered into their crystal ball. Harry felt his heart sinking. He was sure he knew what was coming.
"There is something here,"
Professor Trelawney whispered, lowering her face to the ball so that it was reflected twice in her huge glasses.
"Something moving. But what is it?"
Harry was prepared to bet everything he owned, including his firebolt, that it wasn't good news, whatever it was. And sure enough...
"My dear," Professor Trelawney breathed, gazing up at Harry. "It is here, plainer than ever before, my dear, stalking towards you, growing ever closer, the grim..."
"Oh, for goodness sake," said Hermione loudly. "Not that ridiculous grim again."
Professor Trelawney raised her enormous eyes to Hermione's face. Parvati whispered something to Lavender, and they both glared at Hermione too. Professor Trelawney stood up, surveying Hermione with unmistakable anger.
"I am sorry to say that from the moment you have arrived in this class, my dear, it has been apparent that you do not have what the noble art of divination requires. Indeed, I don't remember ever meeting a student whose mind was so hopelessly mundane."
There was a moment's silence. Then,
"Fine," said Hermione suddenly, getting up and cramming Unfogging the Future back into her bag. "Fine," she repeated, swinging the bag over her shoulder and almost knocking Ron off his chair. "I give up. I'm leaving."
And to the whole class's amazement, Hermione strode over to the trapdoor, kicked it open, and climbed down the ladder out of sight. It took a few minutes for the class to settle down again. Professor Trelawney seemed to have forgotten all about the grim. She turned abruptly from Harry and Ron's table, breathing rather heavily as she tugged her gauzy shawl more closely to her.
"Oh!" said Lavender, suddenly, making everyone start. "Oh, Professor Trelawney, I've just remembered. You saw her leaving, didn't you? Didn't you, Professor? Around Easter, one of our number will leave us forever. You said it ages ago, Professor."
Professor Trelawney gave her a dewy smile.
"Yes, my dear. I did indeed know that Miss Granger would be leaving us. One hopes, however, that one might have mistaken the signs. The inner eye can be a burden, you know."
Lavender and Parvati looked deeply impressed and moved over so that Professor Trelawney could join their table instead.
"Some day Hermione's having, eh?" Ron muttered to Harry, looking awed.
"Yeah." Harry glanced into the crystal ball, but saw nothing but swirling white mist. Had Professor Trelawney really seen the grim again? Would he? The last thing he needed was another near-fatal accident, with the Quidditch final drawing ever nearer. The Easter holidays were not exactly relaxing.
The third years had never had so much homework. Neville Longbottom seemed close to a nervous collapse, and he wasn't the only one.
"Call this a holiday!"
Seamus Finnegan roared at the common room one afternoon.
"The exams are ages away. What are they playing at?"
But nobody had as much to do as Hermione. Even without divination, she was taking more subjects than anybody else. She was usually last to leave the common room at night, first to arrive at the library next morning. She had shadows like lupins under her eyes and seemed constantly close to tears. Ron had taken over responsibility for Buckbeak's appeal. When he wasn't doing his own work, he was poring over enormously thick volumes with names like The Handbook of Hippogriff Psychology and Foul or Foul, A Study of Hippogriff Brutality. He was so absorbed, he even forgot to be horrible to Crookshanks. Harry, meanwhile, had to fit in his homework around Quidditch practice every day, not to mention endless discussions of tactics with Wood. The Gryffindor-Slytherin match would take place on the first Sunday after the Easter holidays. Slytherin were leading the tournament by exactly 200 points. This meant, as Wood constantly reminded his team, that they needed to win the match by more than that amount to win the cup. It also meant that the burden of winning fell largely on Harry, because capturing the snitch was worth 150 points.
"So you must only catch it if we're more than 50 points up," Wood told Harry constantly. "Only if we're more than 50 points up, Harry, or we win the match but lose the cup. You've got that, haven't you? You must only catch the snitch if we're..." "I know, Oliver!" Harry yelled.
The whole of Gryffindor House was obsessed with the coming match. Gryffindor hadn't won the Quidditch Cup since the legendary Charlie Weasley, Ron's second oldest brother, had been seeker. But Harry doubted whether any of them, even Wood, wanted to win as much as he did. The enmity between Harry and Malfoy was at its highest point ever. Malfoy was still smarting about the mud-throwing incident in Hogsmeade, and even more furious that Harry had somehow wormed his way out of punishment. Harry hadn't forgotten Malfoy's attempt to sabotage him in the match against Ravenclaw, but it was the matter of Buckbeak that made him most determined to beat Malfoy in front of the entire school. Never in anyone's memory had a match approached in such a highly charged atmosphere. By the time the holidays were over, tension between the two teams and their houses was at breaking point. A number of small scuffles broke out in the corridors, culminating in a nasty incident in which a Gryffindor fourth year and a Slytherin sixth year ended up in the hospital wing with leeks sprouting out of their ears. Harry was having a particularly bad time of it. He couldn't walk to class without Slytherins sticking out their legs and trying to trip him up. Crabbe and Goyle kept popping up wherever he went and slouching away, looking disappointed when they saw him surrounded by people. Wood had given instructions that Harry should be accompanied everywhere, in case the Slytherins tried to put him out of action. The whole of Gryffindor House took up the challenge enthusiastically, so that it was impossible for Harry to get to classes on time because he was surrounded by a vast, chattering crowd. Harry was more concerned for his firebolt safety than his own. When he wasn't flying it, he locked it securely in his trunk and frequently dashed back up to Gryffindor Tower at break times to check that it was still there. All usual pursuits were abandoned in the Gryffindor common room the night before the match. Even Hermione had put down her books.
"I can't work. I can't concentrate," she said nervously.
There was a great deal of noise. Fred and George Weasley were dealing with the pressure by being louder and more exuberant than ever. Oliver Wood was crouched over a model of a Quidditch pitch in the corner, prodding little figures across it with his wand and muttering to himself. Angelina, Alicia and Katie were laughing at Fred and George's jokes.